You are listening to Nevermind the Balearics. This is a cycling podcast, a five-part Kilometre Zero series by me, Lionel Burney, coming to you from the Challenge Mallorca and proudly supported by our title sponsors, Sports Tours International. I mentioned yesterday the Mallorca 312, one of the most prestigious closed-road sportives in the world. This year, it's on Saturday, April the 26th, and if you go to the event website, you'll see it's already sold out. But never fear, because Sports Tours International can get you a place in the event and take you to the start line in style. There are 3 and 4 night trips still available, starting at just £585 per person, and that includes race entry. You may have to be quick though, because they're selling fast and there's only a limited number still left. The Mallorca 312 is one of those events to tick off your list. The full 312-kilometre event takes you all across the northern half of the island. It's a big day out, that has to be said, with more than 4,500 metres of climbing. But there's still 3 months to train, so if you want to see the best of the island riding on closed roads, this is the event for you. And if you don't quite fancy 312 kilometres, take on the 225-kilometre or 167-kilometre ride instead. They're both great days out in the saddle. You'll stay at the Group Hotel Maritimo, which is right near the start-finish line, and Sports Tours International will look after you, making you feel like a pro for the weekend. So go to sportstoursinternational.co.uk for full details. Now it's on with the show. Good evening, Rob. I'm back in Soyer for a post-race beer. You've had a lovely, relaxing day at the home of cycling, just watching it on the telly.
I have, Bombas, but how are you? Yeah, it was nice watching it on the telly. I mean, it's a little more than that. We're having to try and make it coherent, but yeah, it was a nice afternoon for me as well.
Let's see if we can make this coherent. Let's get straight on with the race today and go back to before the start, or certainly before the race concluded. This was me a bit earlier today, looking ahead at the second race in the Challenge Mallorca series. It's Thursday and we're ready for the second round in the Challenge Mallorca series. Now yesterday, the EF Education Easy Post sports director, Andreas Klier, said that it would be a pan flat day ideally suited to the sprinters. Now I'm not going to debate the second point because it almost certainly will be a bunch sprint, but it's not quite pan flat because there's a couple of little speed bumps that take the riders to the grand heady heights of 160 metres above sea level, and those two rises on the course come at about 60 and 160 kilometres, giving the profile quite a pleasing symmetry. Now let's remind ourselves of Rob's summary of what to expect from today's race.
We go to a different side of the island, south-southeast of the island. That is the Trofeo Salinas. Or if you want to get really into this, Lionel, are you ready? It's Trofeu, if you say it in Mallorcan. So Trofeo in Spanish, Trofeu in Mallorcan. So that this year finishes in a place called Colonia San Jordi. It's going to go past one of the most beautiful beaches in the whole of Europe called Estrenc. I've been there in summer and it's like what I imagine being in the Caribbean to be like, the colour of the water. It's absolutely beautiful. That, I think, is one for the sprinters. It certainly was last year. It was the scene of the first victory for Paul Magny on day one of his pro career.
As Rob said there, this race was won by the French rider Paul Magnier last year. He was making his debut for Soudal Quick-Step, and later on in the season he went on to win 3 stages of the Tour of Britain, of course. Now, although the order of races and the location of the events has changed over the years, there tends to be a fairly predictable rhythm to the Challenge Mallorca. There'll be a few stages suited to the climbers, more all-rounders really than outright climbing at this stage of the season, and there'll be a couple of stages that are ideal for the sprinters. And this year it's today and the final round in Palma on Sunday. But this particular event, although it's moved around the island over the years, it's got a list of winners that include some of the greats of modern day sprinting. If you go back to the turn of the century, Mario Cipollini, Robbie McEwen, Eric Zabel, Oscar Freire all won this event, and a bit more recently Andre Greipel as well. In the not so distant past, there's been a local winner too, Vicente Reins, who was born in Daya and now that he's retired owns a bakery in the town, which I drove through yesterday, Well, back in 2007, he won this round of the Challenge Mallorca. One of only three pro wins in his career, and it came on his home island. Anyway, while the riders are making their way out before they head back to the finish, which is very close to here, and I'll make my way over there shortly, I'm going to take a small detour to the beach at Estrenc, because Rob assures me that it's spectacular. I'm going to break the habit of a lifetime and speculate on the outcome of today's race. Predictions are for losers, aren't they? Because if you predict something incorrectly, no one cares. And if you predict something correctly, no one cares either. But I've picked four riders from this morning's start list to keep an eye on. And if I get a winner from these four, well, Rob, beers are on me. So first up, Fernando Gaviria of Movistar. Hasn't won a race since almost a year ago, early February 2024, at the Tour of Colombia with his last win. Marijn Vandenberg of EF Education Easy Post. He won this equivalent round of the Challenge Mallorca 2 years ago, although it finished up in Alcudia on the northern coast of the island on that occasion. Søren Werenskold of Uno X is my third rider to look out for, and I think probably my favourite for today, Binyam Gamay of Intermarché Wanty. So if any of those four win, the beers are on me, and I'm sure Rob will be delighted. I was looking at the start list to see who has got a chance, or how many riders are still in contention to complete the Challenge Mallorca by starting and finishing all five races, and we're already down to only 43 contenders. There were 43 riders on the provisional start list this morning who finished yesterday's race inside the time limit. I'll try and keep tabs on that as the days go by. Well, I called it, Marijn Vandenberg. I've not lost it yet.
Mystic Bernie, eh?
Hey, what about that, eh?
I mean, come on, there were five sprinters and you picked four, so you know.
To be fair, I don't think anyone's going to be troubling me for the Euro Millions numbers this week, are they?
I've got to check mine. You remind me. Might be a millionaire this time next year, Rodney.
Oh, dear. Well, let's recap what happened, because we knew it would be a sprint, and it was. But it was a little bit sketchy on the running, wasn't it? There was a crash on that running as well. I have to tell you, it was windy out there, so, yeah, not surprised there were a few nervous, twitchy riders.
Long straight road in there. I mean, it was that dangerous that the church bells don't stop tolling here in Soya. They're warning the riders about next year's Trofeo Sicilianus already. And the reason I say that, I shouldn't laugh, because I think I was quite vocal a couple of years ago, actually on air live when we had the Trofeo Sicilianus that finished then in Alcudia, or Alcudi as the locals call it here. Because it was a dangerous finish, if you remember. When Van den Berg won last time, it was raining, and Girmay on that occasion, who was also sprinting with him, decided, nah, that was too dangerous for him. Today, he did sprint. Van den Berg was the best of everybody there, but once more it narrowed, didn't it, in the final straight. The barriers weren't brilliantly placed. You know, there's things like that that should be looked at. However, the big issue, long straight road, headwind, everyone full of motivation. No one's dreams have yet been shattered at this point in the year. Everybody wanting to get that first win, and everybody very, very excited.
Well, as we'll hear a bit later from my adventures down in the southeast of the island, it's very different down there. It's a lot less developed, much less in the way of big roads. So it was, and it's kind of flat as well. So the wind whips in across the nature reserve down there. And I did think, you know, finishing in what is a pretty small part of an already pretty small town, the fact that it ran in more or less straight and then up to the slight rise at the line, maybe the slight uphill at the end just took the edge off a little bit and made it slightly less dangerous than it would have been if they'd been on a dead flat, dead straight bit of road.
It is actually a fairly touristy part of the island in summer. However, because they're not big towns, in winter it seems like the opposite. They're all resorts along that little bit of a coast. Estrenc Beach is protected, so you saw the little nature reserve behind there, and there's a town at either side, so Rapita, where the race didn't touch today, and Colonia San Jordi, where it did finish, and like you say, yeah, they're only busy really for a few months a year, When they are busy, they are busy. It's part of the island I don't know that well because it's the opposite side to where I live. I might go with my friends to the beach a couple of times a year, things like that. But the streets are quiet this time of year. They're pretty narrow, like you say. A strange sort of surreal atmosphere, I think, to have a bike race around there because I was here in the studio, but I can imagine it was pretty dead and pretty quiet around there.
It was. It was very attractive, though. It was such a strange little feeling in the town at the finish. A reasonable crowd came out and probably looked quite good in that finish straight there. Quite a lot of people there. But my first bike race in a while, and I was really struck by the, maybe not absurdity, but certainly the incongruity of World Tour teams all taking over these little side streets, parking up their massive buses. I mean, I walked past the Uno X bus and the lower door was open and there's the washing machine and the dryer and they've already, you know, it's kind of weird. This huge circus rolls into these tiny little places at this time of year and really take over. I was struggling a little bit for an angle at the finish. I saw Biniam Gamai talking to one of his, I think, soigneurs, and he saw me walking across with my recorder and made a sharp exit, just rolled off. He had his sunglasses on, so he didn't have to make eye contact, but he just rolled off. I know he'd seen me, but I didn't fancy a chat.
He's going to have a busy year of interviews, I suspect, if he rides as well as last year, I should say.
Absolutely, well, absolutely right. So I went and hung around. I would say the team bus of the X-Speed United Continental team, but they don't have a bus because they're one of the smallest teams in the race, a Canadian team. And I wanted to wait for really man of the match today, George Radcliffe, young British rider who'd been out in the break and was last man standing. And he was delayed coming back, of course, because he went to the podium to pick up his combativity award. So I waited for George at the one of the two estate cars that I think they probably hired for the week. And I had a chat with George Radcliffe. Hey. Hi, George. I'm Lionel from the Cycling Podcast.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'll ask you a couple
of questions.
I'm a massive
fan. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, great.
Yeah, I'm a bloody massive fan. This is...
Oh, thank you very much. Well, what a day out.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty surreal, really. I mean, this is my third year of like UCI racing and stuff now. For me, the breakaway has always been the sort of thing that's eluded me. Clicked today and I was lucky enough to be in it because cycling is all just luck, really. Like, obviously talent plays a big part, but I think luck is massively underappreciated. So, yeah, I was lucky to be in the break and then just sort of played my cards right at the end to be last man standing.
And a nice trip to the podium for the Combativity Award.
Yeah, a little trophy. First trophy I've had in a while. It's just so strange. Like, I've never been like a particularly good rider. I've like never had big results.
It's all relative.
Hey, it is relative for sure. Like, we're a really small team. This X-Speed United that I ride for, sort of run by volunteers. All the guys sort of have to fend for themselves a little bit. You know, I work sort of almost a full-time job.
Doing what?
Oh, I just work in a coffee shop. And to be fair, my bosses are really good to me. They give me like time off and everything. To be racing against World Tour teams and we're just like guys who are sort of here to experience it and enjoy it, it's pretty cool. Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah, whereabouts are you from in the UK then?
Leeds. So,
oh, okay.
A bit of a cycling hub. So there's a lot of good guys sort of around that train with and stuff. And then you've got your super talents, your Pidcocks and all that. So
tell me a little bit about your journey into cycling then, because I'm going to frighten myself here, but the Grand Départ of the Tour de France was in Yorkshire almost 11 years ago now. You would have been, what, 10 years of age then? 9 or 10? Was that on your radar back then?
Yeah, so I've been cycling my whole life. My parents, sort of, they cycle toured when they got married and stuff like that. They never raced or anything, and I dabbled in it a bit when I was you know, really young. Like one or two races a year sort of thing my parents would take me to. And then sort of since 14, it's become like a weekly occurrence, you know, racing in and out your local crits. And then 20, I sort of did all right as a junior, nothing special. And then did my, you know, A-levels, all that sort of stuff. So couldn't race as a first year U23 that much. And then 2023, I took a massive gamble and moved to Poland for an amateur team in Poland. And then we got like really good UCI invites, but it was literally like four riders and the one staff member. We'd drive through the night to races in his little car. We had like no support, no nothing. And then, yeah, that was pretty tough, but it was an awesome experience in like what it lined me up for. And because of that and the connections I made through that, I've been able to join this X-Speed United that we're on now. And that's been the last sort of 18 months, really.
a Canadian based and backed team, right?
That's right, yeah. Canadian Conti team with sort of mismatch of really nice sponsors and riders from all over the world. It was a really sort of strong Canadian and British core last year, so that was, you know, quite nice. I had a lot of personal mates through that. And yeah, I'm pretty lucky to have my best mate on the team this year as well, Joe Alcroft. It's a pretty awesome setup, really.
And I can see what it means to the guys as well. I mean, and I guess everyone is just trying to catch the right eye in a race like this. Just take whatever opportunity you possibly can. And I mean, you can't have done much more to put yourself in a bit of a shop window this afternoon.
I'd say that's absolutely right. I mean, for me, it's like becoming a professional has always been a dream, but kind of a little bit, not to sound too pessimistic, but almost too ambitious, just because like not having the genes to do it or knowing the right people or whatever. I mean, as British riders, and any British riders who are like listening to this will know, the Conti level is dead. We can't, like, as British riders, we can't raise Conti level unless we're sort of going through a really obscure pathway, like joining a Canadian Conti team or sort of doing 4 years in the French DM1 team to go to a Conti team or something like that. So for me, it's like, it's to enjoy the experience, and then if anything extra comes from it, that's perfect, you know.
Yeah, but you've got to kind of create your own pathway, I guess, and taking a gamble and going to Poland, a big part of that, and maybe something will pay off today. And at the very worst, you've got something for the mantelpiece when you get home, the little combativity prize and the little trophy there.
To some people, this wouldn't be a big deal. You know, I'll be looking back on this sort of for the rest of my life. I had a good mate. I mean, we were really, really unfortunate in 2023. We lost two guys from the team. Separate incidents, but yeah, two guys who'd been riders in the team, they passed away. Close friend of mine, Mark Grunewald. We were racing in Hong Kong when he passed, and sort of the motivation to keep racing and riding and doing well is sort of to try and do him proud, and this is the first step in that journey. It's not, you know, it's not a win, but it's, for me, is, yeah,
it's a big,
awesome.
It's a big deal.
Looking back on this for a long time, yeah.
I mean, you weren't in the bunch long enough today to brush shoulders with anyone famous, but maybe later on in the week you'll get that opportunity.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, it's like complete reverse from yesterday. Yesterday I got dropped on Soyer, and then did like almost got back in on the way up to Val d'Emossa, and then did the last 62k alone, just because I was caught between not being in the bunch and then not being slow enough for the guys behind me. Well, slow enough is cruel, but you know, not being with the guys behind me. So yeah, the last 62k alone, then like 45 it was headwind. So it's full spinning on its head today to be out front. So
there'll be plenty of British cyclists listening to this who've been grovelling up Soler and riding around Mallorca on their own. Don't worry about that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Lionel.
You know what, Rob? I love stories like this. I think it's one of the things that really attracted me to the sport when I first started covering it in the late 90s. These little stories about riders for whom, I mean, I think he's being a bit modest there, but he said it's a day he'll remember for the rest of his life. You know, the chance to be out up in the front there in what, you know, the World Tour riders would consider a small race to kick off the start of their season. A real big opportunity for someone like George Radcliffe. And I really saw what it meant to not just him, but his teammates and staff as well, because as he made the point there, a lot of the staff are volunteers. There were hugs and back slaps and handshakes and a nice little photo of a few of them with the award that George got. I mean, showing my age here, I suggested he could put it on his mantelpiece, but people don't have mantelpieces anymore, do they? At the Home of Cycling, your Broadcaster of the Year award, ironically, blocks the view of the television most of the time.
We had to move it last night, didn't we? We had to move it into the office because we were watching all the Champions League action unfold. Going back to that story, Radcliffe, I completely believe him when he says he's going to remember it for the rest of his life. He was away. It looked like they were about to be swallowed up. There were six of them in the break, weren't there? And it looked pretty formulaic today, didn't it? Let's be honest. We all thought there was going to be a bit of a sprint. 3 minutes, six riders, a lot of small teams like that. You know, and that is the highlight of the year for a lot of the teams there. You know, you had teams today like Tudor, Total Energy, Q36.5, who were desperately trying to be invited to the Giro, the Tour. These guys been invited to Mallorca Challenge is like their Giro Tour. You know, you talked about a lot of them being volunteers. They come from the other side of the world, not in Radcliffe's case, but the team have from Canada. There's an American team here as well. And George Radcliffe, he was out there. Niels Paulet was attacking, trying to you know, spice up the race because UAE didn't really have a top-name sprinter. Morgado had a go. Even young Marcos Freire, Oscar Freire's son, had a go. 18 years of age. Pau Llaneras, Joan Llaneras' son, he had a go to chase him. And none of them could chase young Radcliffe. So he will remember that moment where he held them all off for 20, 30 Ks. And behind him, a double Grand Tour winner in the peloton as well, in Nairo Quintana. All of those, you know, green jersey, Biniam Girmay. He's holding all of these guys off. Of course he's going to remember it forever. Brilliant.
And over the rest of the week, he may well get a chance to rub shoulders with a few of them in the peloton. You mentioned Marcos Freire there. His name leapt off the start sheet this morning because I realised, I mean, I was talking about the rapid onset of years and how quickly time, well, it's like being George Radcliffe getting caught by the peloton, isn't it? Catches up with you eventually as the tram goes past. It will be...
That's a cycling podcast hello, that, isn't it?
Down to one car again tonight. What's going on, Rob?
Everyone's staying in Sawyer, that's why. It's Thursday tonight, and Dijous in Mallorquin. Jueves in Spanish. Juernes, for anyone who's having a beer on Thursday night. It's a bit of Spanish slang for you.
Well, just to go back to Oscar Freire's son, Marcus, 18 years old, riding for UAE Team Emirates, as he said, Rob. Finished 58th, I think, today. But the thing that struck me was that he was born on the 17th of July, 2006.
Oh, my word.
Now, I know exactly where I was that day because my very good colleague on the cycling magazine I used to work for, Ed Pickering, and I, along with another of the magazine's writers, Dan Duguid, who is actually a decent level domestic rider in the UK, we set ourselves a ludicrous challenge of trying to ride an unofficial Étape du Tour.
Wow.
On the stage from Montélimar to Gap. And the idea was we get up at the crack of dawn and set off and see how long it would take before the peloton caught us, see if we could even get to the finish. I think Dan Duguid may well have got close to Gap, but maybe didn't make it all the way before getting pulled off the road by the gendarme. Unfortunately, Ed and I got waylaid by a very nice looking food and drink festival and we had a couple of glasses of rosé, and that, I'm afraid, I abandoned at the next feed zone. But the reason for all of this is that Oscar Freire was in the peloton racing the Tour de France that day. He'd won two stages of that race already, while his wife was in Switzerland giving birth to little Marcus.
Wow.
And that stage was on a Sunday. The following day was a rest day, and Freire had to get permission from the race organisers to leave the kind of Tour de France bubble. The team obviously let him go, and he took a private jet to Switzerland to go and meet his young lad, Marcus, baby Marcus, for the first time on that rest day in the 2006 Tour de France, which to me feels like only yesterday, but for Marcus Freire, it's a whole lifetime ago. I mean, dear me, dear me. Anyway, we said we would talk a little bit about the tourism aspect, Mallorca's huge industry, tourism. Let's go back to this morning, because you recommended I go to the beach at...
Estrenc.
And I did, and it was glorious. It was a lovely beach. I mean...
Not the greatest beach weather today, though, was it? I mean, it was nice and sunny, a lot of wind, a lot of waves. It was day for surfing, maybe, rather than sunbathing.
It was. I tried to record a bit down on the beach, but it was just too windy. And the wind was picking up on the mic. I thought it was a stunning-looking beach. Very, very natural. Not what I would think of when I think of Mallorca, really. Probably the sort of place that, you know, the locals would go to, or Spanish visitors might know a bit more about, perhaps. But the world authority on beaches, of course, is Ciro Scognamiglio, our very good friend at La Gazzetta dello Sport. So I had to give him a call and see what mark out of 10 he would give the beach there at Estrenc. Well, first of all, how many marks out of 10 would you give the beach picture that I sent you?
Six out of 10, why not?
Wow, only six. Your standards are very high, Ciro.
Yeah, exactly. My standards are very high, exactly. For this reason, you know, I'm the maximal expert. Very serious stuff for me. So, also for enthusiasm, I mean, you can easily understand, you know? Where are you?
Well, where do you think? I'll give you two guesses.
Let me see again.
Tough, isn't it?
Not easy to understand for me.
If I tell you, Ciro, that I'm parked up in the car, I've left the beach and I can just see a bike race going past.
But you are in Australia.
No.
No.
Mallorca. No. Mallorca.
Ah, you are in Mallorca. Which part of Mallorca is you are the obviously for the trophy, but where exactly?
No, on the southeast of the island, Estrenc. It's a little hidden gem that I knew nothing about. Rob Hatch told me, go and have a look at the beautiful beach. It's really, really quiet. Even in the holiday season,
it's marvelous.
Nice and remote. I thought you might like it.
I know Mallorca, but I know better the north part. For example, I know really well the zone of Porta d'Alcudia, where normally I remember that the Team Sky did training camps. I was there several times, but very nice, very nice.
So tell me, Ciro, very quickly, what's the big story in Italian cycling at the moment? What are you working on?
Not really much in this period, you know, especially because you know, like in this period, Italian cycling has not really big stars, certainly good results on track, but the main guys are Filippo Ganna and Jonathan Miran. But you know that Italian people, they want the big name. Italian tifosi, they want the big name for Grand Tours, and so far we don't have this name. Maybe Antonio Tiberi could do a good Giro d'Italia, but you know, it's not a big start so far. I'm always working on cycling, but I'm working in this period also a little bit on tennis, because we have Yannick Sinner, you know, it's very big for my newspaper. I'm working a little bit also on tennis, but mainly on cycling as usual. But not really, I mean, waiting for the wild cards for the Giro, but not really big stuff.
Well, Rob, I think Ciro was being very harsh there. 6 out of 10. I would say easily 8.5. I mean, 9, really. The kind of beach that appeals to me. You're doing the Italian gesture for no way, Jose.
Ma che sta a dire? I'm disappointed in Ciro there. I'm really disappointed. I invite Ciro to come back on a beautiful summer's day, because that beach is a little like being in his own paradise in Sardinia.
Well, I will post a photo on Instagram. I mean, the picture does do it justice. It does look nice. Anyway, let's delve into our conversation about tourism and Mallorca a little bit. If there is such a thing as a hidden gem on the island of Mallorca, maybe that was it. The beach at Estrenc certainly felt gloriously unspoiled. A stark contrast, really, to where I was yesterday at Palma Nova, right over on the other corner of the island in the southwest there. It feels like there's a real effort to not develop this stretch of coastline where the long sandy beach stretches for pretty much as far as you can see. Maybe that's because the nature reserve is behind the beach. That's probably a big factor. Or perhaps it's just because the €5 charge to get into the car park is keeping down the visitor numbers, I don't know. But it's, well, as I say, gloriously unspoiled. I didn't even see a beachfront bar or cafe, and so it just looked like a place that's being preserved so that people can just enjoy the sandy beach and the sea views and the nature reserve. But of course, tourism is hugely important to the island of Mallorca and its near neighbours, and it's probably the reason that the Challenge Mallorca exists as a bike race at all. Now, visitor numbers have risen since the pandemic. In 2023, 12.5 million people visited Mallorca on holiday, and that's up almost 9% on the pre-pandemic figures. The other day, Rob and I were stuck in the traffic around Palma, and he made a comment about being slightly pleased that the locals would get a chance to see that the traffic jams are not all caused by the tourists that flock to the island in the height of summer. It can be a busy place, especially around Palma, all year round. Now, whether people will be flocking to Estrenc to see whether the beach there is a 6 out of 10, as Ciro scored it, or an 8 out of 10, as I probably scored it on the low side, actually. It's probably 8.5. Well, it remains to be seen whether it becomes a tourist hotspot, but I doubt it. Rob, I think I told you this when I arrived, but my first ever trip to Mallorca was as a sort of youngish teenager, and it was my first ever trip on an aeroplane.
Wow.
Yeah, we came over to Palma and we stayed in Puerto Payensa, and I remember hired a mountain bike and rode up to the lighthouse at Formentor. Glorious ride, quite hard on a mountain bike. It wasn't a great bike, but I got up there. My parents drove up there and we had lunch, and then I rode back down again and was quite shocked, I remember, to find that it was into a headwind. So the sensation of descending was, I didn't get the full benefit.
You slowed down going downhill.
I got slowed down going downhill, yeah. And obviously yesterday I saw these two incredibly diverse sides of Mallorca in terms of architecture, history, wealth even, really. Magaluf and Palma Nova, not really my cup of tea.
I can tell you, I've lived here on and off for 7 years now. I've never been to Magaluf. I don't want to go.
Maybe we should go on Saturday night. No, okay. When I was in Valldemossa yesterday,
yes,
I was looking out for this incredible property that you tipped me off about, where the Hollywood actor Michael Douglas and his also Hollywood actor wife Catherine Zeta-Jones live. Now, I did a bit of research on this, and apparently it was on the market in 2014.
Sestaca.
For just the €55 million.
Oh, that. Bargain.
So maybe another couple of years as a cycling podcast, and that might be within my price range. I don't know.
I mean, the race, you didn't see that, because as I think I said yesterday, it's sort of heading away down the cliff. Where the race did go past today was Richard Branson's new hotel, and Adam and I were joking. Adam thought he could get us in there for a coffee, and I was like, well, only if you're paying, mate. But very far too posh for us, that sort of stuff. But yes.
But what about tourism on the island? Because you...
Interesting topic at the moment, Lionel.
Well, lots of famous people come here. You were telling me that Barack Obama had come to play a round or two of golf.
Yes. Michelle apparently comes as well. American tourism's really sort of bloomed in the last 5 or 6 years, actually. You hear a lot of American accents around, and believe it or not, there is now a direct flight in summer. I think it's 3 times a week for around 3 or 4 months from New York to Palma. We're getting a lot of Asian tourism now, a lot of Chinese, Korean tourism, and I know that the regional government's actively pushing to try and get a direct flight from China now. So they're pushing the new markets, and there's a lot of pressure politically. You know, and I think, you know, most of the listeners will know and have seen the news about mass tourism protests and things like that.
It's big in Barcelona, that, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's getting the same in Palma. And it's a confused old movement at the minute, I would say. And I understand the roots of it, because unfortunately a lot of people have been priced out of buying houses. You know, I lived in London for a while as well, and the same happened there, for other economic reasons. Obviously, you know, the whole world's going through a tough economic moment, the cost of living crisis, and I know each country will protest to their own government, but it's not a unique thing in any country. Unfortunately, it's something that's happening all over the world. Spain's no different. I've got a lot of friends who, you know, are worried about their rent that's suddenly skyrocketed, and when you add Airbnbs and holiday lets into that, it really pushes the price up. And obviously it's not the fault of the people coming on holiday. That's the side of it that is rather unpleasant to me. You see those protests, and, you know, for example, I've seen my mum, by the way, who's almost retired, a nurse, so certainly not on mega books to, you know, come and change anybody's prospects of buying a house here. She comes to visit me, but I've seen the way that when she's been into a bar where they didn't know that, you know, that, because obviously I'm in quite a small town, everyone knows everyone, so I know everybody in the band. And when
you're
so,
a face, Rob. Well, you're
no,
a face
no, no,
in
no,
Soya.
No. Like joking aside, when they saw me go to her, she got treated differently. So the way that tourists are treated and the amount they're charged sometimes is very different. So there is an issue, and it's not a savoury thing. You can understand where the problem comes from, but the way and the protests getting rather ugly at the minute, and it's sort of overspill from what you've all seen on your tellies. So it is a big political thing at the moment, and every government that comes in is having to tread really carefully. So I'm watching the Challenge Mallorca with interest to see how much the tourist board backs it in the next few years.
Where are we eating tonight, Rob?
I'm just looking down the square. Unfortunately, the end of January is the period in Soya where I would say 70% of restaurants are closed. I'm looking at a place I would have liked to have taken you into the square tonight, but it's been opening the day and they've decided that because there's no tourists here at the moment, they're not opening in the evening. We'll find somewhere, don't you worry.
Is it going to be the curry house down the street there somewhere, maybe?
That's always a good backup, but we might be able to find somewhere else. We'll see.
Well, tomorrow is the third race in the series of five here at the Challenge Mallorca, and we'll be back again tomorrow night. Thank you, Rob.
Fin de man. Ciao.
This is the Cycling Podcast, which is supported by Sports Tours International.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freed, and Lionel Burney.